Today is Thursday, February 27th, 2014. This is Ann Wadsworth talking to Mr. Reginald Barney, also known as Reggie, who is a lifelong resident of the Canaan area, and he's going to talk about his knowledge and passion for the first trains that came through Canaan and Orange. Okay, take it away.
All right. Back in the 1840s, a company called the Northern Railroad was a corporation formed by subscriptions and financed by them, and they began construction of the first rail line ever to extend north of Concord, New Hampshire. The first stage of the construction went fairly smoothly up to Franklin, New Hampshire. After leaving Franklin, the terrain became more hostile, and there were many sharp and lengthy grades, much cutting to do and filling to be done. The construction was done by Irish laborers, raw, hard-working men from the old sod. No job was so difficult or dangerous as to face these sons of toil. And the biggest hurdle was just 2 or 3 miles southeast of Canaan at the Grafton Orange Town line called the Summit. It was called the Summit because it's the highest point on the line between Boston and the Connecticut River in White River Junction, Vermont. All the streams and rivers on the southeast side of the Summit run into the Merrimack River. All the streams and rivers on the northwest side of the Summit run into the Connecticut River. So what the Irishmen had to do at the Summit was to make a deep cut through the ledges, and it took them 22 months of monotonous hand drilling and gunpowder blasting to complete the job. After the Summit, it was all downhill to the banks of the Connecticut River in West Lebanon. And so one November day in 1847, the first shrill screech of a locomotive whistle made beautiful music to the ears of a gathering of Canaanites who had assembled at the depot to hail the arrival of train number one. Up to this point in time, the automobile had not been invented, and the only means of transportation was by stagecoach, horseback, walking, and canoe. So now townsfolk could travel not only to Concord but to Boston and back in a single day. Imagine the thrill at the prospect of joining hands with the outside world. It was truly an age of progress, a great time to be alive. I was born in 1927, so the railroad through Canaan had been in operation for 80 years. Vast improvements had been made by then in better track, faster speeds, new sidings, new signals, and the ownership of the line was now given over to the Boston and Maine. As a youngster, I remember riding down to the depot from our dairy farm with my father in an old farm truck twice a month to pick up a load of grain which came in 100-pound sacks for our dairy cows, our horses, and our chickens. There would be several other farmers lined up at the boxcar waiting their turn to load up, so I had time to explore the freight yard and take in the sights and sounds of train activity. I was intrigued by the huge steam engines and thrilled when an engineer would haul down a greeting to me. There would be usually some sort of train activity going on, either an engine taking on water at the huge water tank or a pusher engine coming backwards from the Summit and turning around on the Y before returning to White River Junction. Or it could be a way freight unloading supplies at the freight house, or a passenger train stopping to take on or unload passengers, or an express train roaring through town without stopping. During the 1940s and early 1950s, 12 daily passenger trains, including Pullmans, passed through Canaan, and a like number of freight trains. A popular early morning train, nicknamed the Peanut, left Canaan heading south at 6:36 a.m., reaching Concord at 7:55, and Boston at 9:30. The Peanut returned, leaving Boston at 5:30 p.m., and arriving back in Canaan at 8:19 p.m. If you didn't want to spend the day in Boston, you could take a 1 p.m. train out and arrive in Canaan back at 3:44 p.m. Trains back then were the lifeblood of the community. They brought us mail, which was sorted in special mail post office cars, likewise express packages. All kinds of freight was shipped in and out, farm machinery, household goods, milk, lumber, pulpwood, barrels of cider, apples, butternuts, cordwood, mica, feldspar. Back in the very early days of steam, the steam engines were run by cordwood, and that was a source of income to many local farmers and men and people who owned woodlots. On the downside, Canaan experienced several bad railroad accidents. The worst one happening on September 15, 1907. Freight train number 267 left Concord for White River Junction with a steam locomotive, a tender, and 27 boxcars, of which 21 were loaded, and the estimated weight of the train and load was 770 tons. On its way to White River, it was to meet a passenger train, number 31 from Montreal, and another passenger train, number 30, from Quebec. When the freight got to Canaan, the crew found a red light, which was noticed to them to stop and wait for orders. So the engineer and the conductor went into the Canaan telegraph office, where they received from Mr. Greeley, the operator, a dispatch from the dispatcher's office in Concord, stating passenger train number 30 will run 1 hour and 10 minutes late, West Lebanon to East Andover. So the freight proceeded to West Canaan, a distance of 4.5 miles, to allow passenger train number 30 to pass there. Number 30 was a passenger train from Quebec, consisting of a locomotive, baggage car, an ordinary coach, a smoker, a pullman with 150 people on board. Many were returning from Sherbrooke Fair in Sherbrooke, Quebec. At White River Junction, they received orders to run 40 minutes late to East Andover. On level track on the east end between Canaan and West Canaan, the two trains collided, completely wrecking them, driving the baggage car through the passenger coach, killing 26 passengers and injuring 20 others. Both locomotives plunged down a low bank to the south. The momentum of the 26 heavy freight cars struck the passenger car edgewise above the flooring and cut its way through to the other end. The smoking car and pullman were very little damaged, and the passengers in them escaped with very slight injuries. The morning was dark, and dense fog had settled down upon the railroad bed. The freight was running about 25 miles an hour, and the passenger 35 miles an hour. Both engineers threw their brakes into emergency and shut off the steam. They jumped into the darkness and miraculously escaped serious injury. Wrecking and relief trains came from White River Junction and Concord with physicians and helpers, and bodies were removed to hospitals at Hanover and Concord. The last serious wreck occurred in Canaan on August 19, 1949, injuring 44 persons when northbound express passenger train bound for Montreal crashed head-on into a siding with a waiting southbound passenger train headed for Boston. A crew member of the southbound train inadvertently threw a switch which sent the northbound express under the siding on which the Boston had halted to permit the other to pass. A baggage car stood the brunt of the shock on the southbound and was reduced to a heap of shredded wood. On April 14, 1954, the last B&M steam engine left Westboro Station in Lebanon for Boston and possible dismantling. During the war years and shortly after, railroad stations all up and down the Boston main line were crowded, busy places with people coming and going all hours of the day and night. Railroads were the lifeblood of the community, the way to travel. Everybody used them. After the war, then came newer and more comfortable automobiles, interstate highways, large comfortable buses, and of course airplanes. They cut into the number of people using trains. And by January 1965, a sign was posted at railroad stations on the line stating discontinuance of railroad service from the Upper Valley to Boston. It was a sad thing to read because it told the end of an era. I have a few notes taken from Ned B. Smith's draft entitled Flood, Frame, and Quake and Gale. He says, in addition to train wrecks, the train wrecks tragically struck the railroads by the way of Mother Nature. Blizzards and great floods. The great blizzard of March 1888 shut down the railroad for several weeks. The deep cut through the ledges at the Orange Summit was filled with drifted snow. The train snowplows couldn't budge it. Chinese crews from Boston were sent up to shovel the snow out. It took weeks. Floods also wreaked havoc. The west winds come in 1895, March 1919, November 1927, and April 1934. Bridges, roadbeds, and whole embankments fell victim to the raging torrents, and damage to the Boston and Maine alone reached into the millions. But the flood to end all floods in Canyon Village, that is, hit us with the awful hurricane of September 21st, 1938. This time, the ancient gristmill was washed away and fell into the swirling waters with a terrible crash, and the railroad decided that it had lost its Canaan railroad yards enough time, so it purchased the mill site and the dam that for so many years had acted as a destructive bottleneck and blasted the riverbed widely enough open so that no major flood damage has been experienced locally since.
Ah, thank you. That was a very complete history of the railroad. You told a story, however, about going to Montreal with your school friends.
Okay.
Can you remember that?
Yes, very vividly. We was all excited. Our class of 1944, Canaan High School, had it planned a trip to go to Montreal, and we'd of course go by train, and the train left Canaan at midnight. We called it the Midnight Express. Sometimes the train it wasn't a scheduled stop. It had to be flagged to be stopped. And so we, six of us in the graduating class and two chaperones, teachers, went with us. We went to the Canaan station just before midnight and told the station master that we was going to board, go to Montreal. So we got our tickets and went outside to wait. Well, around the corner, I can remember the corner coming around from Orange, we saw the headlights of this passenger train, and it was an express train, and it was really speeding. And when he saw the signal, he put on his brakes, and it screeched right past the station. It was going so fast that he had to back up. We get on. The conductor said, "Hurry up, get on, hurry up. We don't want to stop here about long." And so he rushed us on, and we took off and went to White River. That was the first really thrilling train ride that I'd taken in my boyhood.
Oh, that's great. Did you take the Peanut as well?
Yes, we used to take the Peanut. My mother and I used to go to Boston occasionally,
uh-huh.
And we'd take the Peanut and on and come back and that evening.
Would you take it as an outing?
Yeah, to go shopping, uh-huh. Usually, yes. Uh-huh. And then visiting different, like, museums and things in
Boston. Oh, fantastic.
Boston, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that sad that we can't do that now?
I know it.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything else you can add to the trains or some good memories?
As I say, it was a center of activity at this railroad station. On a Saturday night or Friday night, people used to come in from the farms around the village to shop, mm-hmm. And the Canaan Street would be lined with the automobiles lined up front of the drugstore and the movie theater. And a lot of people would go to the train station to wait for the Peanut to come in, and mm-hmm. They'd visit and talk and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I remember the mail train, they'd leave the mail, and Mr. Barnum used to meet it with in the summertime, he had a wagon with big high wheels. He pushed the wagon with mail up to the post office and unload it. In the wintertime, he had a sled, and you'd bring the mail up from the train station to the post office on a sled to be sorted.
And didn't you say that there was a window that they would close until they sorted the mail, and then they'd open back
That's
up?
That's right, right. Mm-hmm. They had certain hours where you could pick up your mail, And every time the train would come through with the mail, they'd close the windows and sod it. Then after it was sodded, they'd open up the windows up again.
And what about being able to pass a package? If a package was being delivered, somehow the train person would stick his hand out and accept the package, but if they missed, they'd have to do it on the next pass?
That was, I forget what they call them, but he'd have to stick it, as the train was going by, he'd have to stick his arm out into a sling leg, and there was a bag hanging on that sling.
Right.
And he would catch the pouch in his arm.
Yeah.
But if he missed, what happened if he missed?
I think they had to wait until the next train.
Next train, right, yeah.
It was just slow.
Right.
And you said when the first crash happened, you were a little boy, and you had to finish your milking, and you had to finish all your farm chores.
Yeah, that was the one in 1940. That was one of the later, August 19th, 1949. So I was born 27. I was in my early 20s.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was milking. A neighbor going home, stopped in and said, just there's been a train wreck in Canaan. So after milking, I went down to look it over.
Yeah, must have been very frightening.
It was, yeah.
Mm, wow. Well, anything else that you can tell us?
Can't think of anything right now.
Okay. No, I'll turn it off for the moment.